things I enjoy watching from time to time on TV is home and garden television, HGTV. Maybe some of you like these shows as well. There's something about the home improvement shows where they have a big DIY project or they're trying to fix up a house to sell. And there's all the stress of the unexpected costs and the unforeseen problems and the blown budgets and the relationship stress. And then the final reveal when the project is all done. Home improvement, as I'm sure we've all gone through, is stressful but mostly satisfying in the end, we hope. Today's sermon is about a DIY project, but on a greater scale than many of us have undertaken, rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, which is no small task if we're reading along. This is part of our series on the story, the Bible as one continuous story of God and God's people. And if you've been reading along and you finished this chapter, congratulations, you have officially finished the Old Testament portion of the story. You've made it about two-thirds of the way through the story, and if you haven't been reading along, you can always jump in and join us for the New Testament portion, which will be beginning next week. So at this point in the story, as we've been saying, the exiles are returning to their homeland, but it's a bittersweet homecoming. It's a joy to be back at home, but it's discouraging to see their city in ruins from the devastation of their overthrow by Babylon. Under Ezra, the priest, they began rebuilding the temple foundation in Jerusalem, which we talked about a few weeks ago. And now Nehemiah leads the people to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Cities back then required walls around them as fortifications to keep them safe from intruders. So it was very key to have walls that were rebuilt. They served as a source of protection and a boundary between nations and really gave them symbolically a sense of their identity, which had been really tested over their time in the exile. So Judah was not just rebuilding walls or rebuilding a city, but kind of rebuilding their own identity before God, restoring their identity. And we see God's grace that God had not rejected them despite their sin and disobedience, despite their time in exile. God's grace was with them. We saw that through the various stories, through Daniel, through Esther, through some of the other stories we've talked about. We see God's grace, and yet they were still facing a difficult, heart-wrenching rebuilding project. The story of Nehemiah, this lower story, we'll see how this fits in with God's ultimate DIY project, his overarching plan of redemption for all people in of humankind in that upper story. And we'll look at what Nehemiah's story might have to say to us today. So to give you a little background on Nehemiah, he was a man who heard of the remnant who survived the exile back in Jerusalem, but the city was in ruins, it had been built by fire, the walls were destroyed. So Nehemiah is sorrowful and he pours out a prayer of confession to God and expresses sorrow and regret for God's people and their disobedience and their wickedness, their unfaithfulness to God's covenant. And he prays for their redemption and prays for the favor of the king as he asks for the opportunity to return to Jerusalem to rebuild. And we see again God's gracious favor toward his people. And we also see his control over foreign leaders to accomplish God's purposes. We see leaders that think they're in charge and their gods are in charge, but this story shows that how the Lord works in and through them to bring about his purposes. So Nehemiah goes to King Artaxerxes and he asks for the king's favor to go back and rebuild. And he also asks for safe passage, for letters that allow him to pass safely. And in God's grace, the king gives him favor and allows him to go back. And so he goes back to Jerusalem and surveys the damage and sees all the burned out areas of the fortifications and how the walls have been dilapidated and in disrepair. And he calls the people to action in chapter 2, beginning at verse 17. He says, "You see the trouble we are in. how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. Come, let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem so that we may no longer suffer disgrace. I told them the hand of my God has been gracious upon me, and also the words that the king has spoken to me. Then they said, come, let us start building. And they committed themselves to the common good. So the people got to work and started rebuilding. But of course, as there always are, there were obstacles that came up. When you're rebuilding the walls of a devastated city, it's a big task, obviously. Required great manpower, resources, and planning, and was a big investment of time and labor and resources and sweat equity. And of course, people had doubts about their ability to complete the work they had undertaken. How many of us have undertaken even a small DIY project in our homes, and we thought it would be simple and then ended up turning into a much longer ordeal? Well, you can imagine that on a city level back in around the 5th century BC. You can see how much more of a challenge this was. They also faced external obstacles, foreign people who did not favor them and did not want to see them rebuild and prosper. And there's a couple folks that are mentioned, Sanballat, the Amorite, and Tobiah, the Ammonite, and Geshem, the Arab, who all mocked and ridiculed God's people and tried to keep them, discourage them from doing the work they were called to do. Yet Nehemiah stands firm and encourages the people, and they keep going despite the obstacles, despite being constantly derided and mocked by their foreign people around them, and despite threats of attack, such that the builders had to build at one point with a sword in one hand and a hammer in the other to protect themselves. They were under pretty difficult circumstances. Those who were against them continued their threats against Nehemiah. They tried to stir up false reports against him, accusing him of fomenting rebellion against the king and trying to incite fear in the people. There were even false prophets that came out against Nehemiah, who hindered their progress. Nehemiah had a tough road. But yet, despite all of this, the walls were rebuilt. And once the walls were completed, a census was taken of all the exiles. And Ezra the priest read aloud the law of the Lord. And the people celebrated. And they renewed their covenant, this special binding relationship with God. And they promised to obey the law and bring the Lord proper offerings. So this was not just a physical rebuilding, but a spiritual rebuilding. And they dedicated the walls of Jerusalem with a great procession and songs of thanksgiving. In Nehemiah 12:43, and on that day they offered great sacrifices, rejoicing because God had given them great joy. So as we read this story of Nehemiah, we can wonder, what does this story have to say to us today? Well, like other stories in the Old Testament, as we've been reading, we see God proves to be faithful and enables the people to overcome obstacles to accomplish God's purposes for them. We've seen this throughout the story, and we see this here with Nehemiah. We see how God works through often unlikely sources, foreign leaders, enemies even, to bring about God's purposes for God's people. God comforts and encourages the people, and comforts and encourages us in our lives. Now, we still, like those in Judah rebuilding the walls, we still face many obstacles. Life isn't necessarily easy when we follow God, but we have God's grace and presence with us. Sometimes, even in our own lives, God may use the people we don't like or that might offer resistance to us, who don't want us to accomplish his plans. God may work through those people to bring about God's purposes. And we sometimes encounter obstacles in our Christian faith, obstacles from outside of ourselves, people and circumstances that seem to work against God's purposes, and also obstacles within ourselves, our own doubts, our own fears, our own sense of being overwhelmed, our lack of trust. And yet God works in and through us to accomplish God's purposes. Judah had her detractors, those who wanted to see her fail, those who did whatever they could to discourage her and take her off track. And we too have our detractors, who do what they can to thwart God's purposes, but we can be encouraged, like Nehemiah and the workers, that God will enable us to overcome these obstacles, and we'll see his purposes through to completion. We also see that Nehemiah is not just about a building project. It's not just about rebuilding walls or fortifications. It's about God restoring his people's identity, reminding them of his promises, being present with them through times of difficulty and frustration, and delivering them. This building project in the lower story of Nehemiah is part of God's upper story plan of redemption for all of humankind. In this plan, God will eventually redeem all of creation and put all the world to right once and for all. And we will be fully transformed into a people who can live in the good, just, compassionate, and righteous kingdom which God is creating and bringing into being. This story is looking forward to a time when God's kingdom will come in fullness, where there'll be no need for walls or other fortifications, for God's will shall be fully done here on earth as it is in heaven. So we pray every week. Now, there's a lot of talk of walls in our current political discourse. I don't mean to get political, but I want to give us a spiritual lens through which to view some of what we're experiencing and remind us of our calling as Christ's followers, regardless of our political points of view. Obviously, we see there's a lot of anger and discord and division in our society. And in this atmosphere, we see some have turned to violence and acted out their hatred of others, as we've seen this past week in the horrific attack on two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, where 49 people were killed and many other injured while they were at prayer. We've seen similar attacks, such as the shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, the church in Charleston, South Carolina, and other places, all kinds of acts of terror and mass shootings in our society. Of course, we condemn such acts of hatred, and we stand in solidarity with victims. We support them and pray for them. After witnessing so many horrific events such as this, it can be difficult to know how to process them, how to respond, how to make a difference. It seems like there's so many of them. They're so overwhelming. We, of course, offer our thoughts and prayers, as we always do. But I believe God is calling us as followers of Jesus to wed those thoughts and prayers with action and promote peace and combat hatred in our world. As Jesus' followers, we're called to love one another, to love our neighbors, and even to love our enemies. And God's grace gives us the power to live out love and peace in a world rocked by hatred and violence. I think in today's era, rather than building walls, we're called to build bridges between ourselves and others, especially those that might be different from us. Building bridges means building relationships with others. It means taking a proactive role, learning about our neighbors, their culture, their religion, their languages, their hopes, their fears, their dreams, seeing them as fellow human beings created in God's image. It means getting out into our community and really getting to know those around us, being open to learning from them and standing with them in difficult times. Now, the task of building such bridges can seem overwhelming, especially in a world that is so fractured and overrun with hatred and violence. Just like the building project in Nehemiah, the task can seem overwhelming. And it seems like there are so many Sanballats and Tobias and Geshems in our world that want to obstruct and destroy and tear apart the bridges we want to build. And yet, like Nehemiah, we must not lose heart, and we must not shrink away from action, from God's call upon our lives. Even if it's a small step forward in building a bridge, we can take that step in faith, knowing that God will bring about God's purposes. In the wake of this most recent terror attack in the Muslim community, in New Zealand, we have an opportunity to begin building bridges and healing the pain and division we see. As I mentioned earlier, tonight at 6 p.m. at the Islamic Society of Delaware, interfaith leaders and others from the community will be gathering for prayer and to stand in solidarity with the Muslim community in the wake of this recent tragedy. And I'm planning to be there and would encourage all of you to consider being there as well. It's a place where we can start the process of building bridges with our neighbors. During my first year here as pastor, I began to get involved in the Newark Interfaith Fellowship, a group of clergy and faith leaders from a variety of traditions. We meet monthly for fellowship and support, and working together for the greater good of our community in a variety of ways. As you know, we hosted the Interfaith Thanksgiving service a few years back, and other faith communities take turns hosting this event. It's an event that brings people together, and many who've attended find it very uplifting and offering of hope. Well, in addition to our monthly events, during my first year, I was invited, along with other faith leaders, to an iftar party. Now, for those who don't know what that is, an iftar party is a Muslim celebration where participants break the fast of Ramadan. During Ramadan, Muslims fast from sunrise to sunset, and after sunset, they break the fast together with a communal meal. And the interesting thing about this particular interfaith iftar party was that it was organized by a member of the Sikh community, which is a different faith tradition. And as a Sikh, he wanted to host an iftar party for the Muslim community as an act of fostering peace and goodwill among our traditions. And all of the interfaith partners were invited to attend, and I attended along with several other Protestant ministers, colleagues, as well as those from other faith traditions. And it was a wonderful celebration with delicious food and conversation. And it was a great time to begin building bridges with those of other traditions. The gentleman who hosted the event said he did it to confront the dark spiritual forces of hatred and division that were at work in our world. Those were his words. And at the event, as we were all eating and conversing with one another, I thought to myself, if a Sikh can throw an iftar party for the Muslim community and invite the Protestant ministers to join in, then there is hope for our world. Because I believe God desires to reconcile all human beings to himself and to one another, and God is working out this upper story of redemption in our lives and in the lives of our communities, and we can be part of it as Jesus followers. We can be part of the bridge-building efforts of redemption and reconciliation that God set in motion and will bring to completion and is bringing to completion. So let us remember that Nehemiah's story of rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, rebuilding faith, rebuilding trust, rebuilding their identity as God's people. And maybe go through this season of Lent, determined to rebuild the walls of our spiritual lives, trusting that through God's grace and provision, we will experience a total DIY transformation of our inner selves to be more like Christ, to show Christ's love to those around us. And may we also, with God's help, build bridges of understanding and compassion with our neighbors, with those in our community, even with our enemies, trusting that as we do so, we are living out the good and righteous and just and compassionate kingdom God is bringing into fullness. May we do this, and may the Lord bless this message to our hearing. Amen.